Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Beyond the Junkyard podcast. I am your host, Junkyard James. With me, like always, on the Thursday live stream, we got the man, the myth, the legend, the one with the most sauce. That is Cody Marinara. How are you doing, my friend?
Blurring the lines. That'll be the theme for today's show. Blurring the lines. How far can we blur the lines before people go crazy? The mornings are feeling absolutely fantastic down here in good old North Kakalaki. If only it could stay that way throughout the entirety of the day. But we're getting there. Slowly but surely getting more and more into fall. And I love it. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing pretty good. It's been a pretty low, even keel week. We're into the back half of the week. Tomorrow's Friday. Everybody can the work week is up unless you have to work the weekend. But we're almost at the weekend, and we got some good football planned up for you. You know, we're gonna have to stir that sauce this weekend, but it's going to be we're heading into the weekend, and I'm doing pretty good right now. Let me transition out of that into some housekeeping rules for you, everybody. Four buttons on the top of the screen, or four icons, I guess you could say. Like this video if you're watching live or watching on demand after the live stream is recorded. Comment below, especially tonight. Hit that chat up at the end of the show. We have a list of Discord questions. I have the questions. I don't know if you've been in the Discord to see the questions yet, and I haven't shared them with you. So this might be running straight off the cuff with you tonight. But we have some Q&A questions to end the show tonight, and we'll take some in the chat if the chat has some. So leave your questions below in the chat tonight. Share this video with all of your pro wrestling friends and family, and subscribe. We had a pretty good weekend and week so far with subscriptions. We are up to 52 subscriptions. I think that's up three from last Thursday, or two or three from last Thursday. So keep subscribing, keep hitting that notification bell. Let's build something here, and join the Discord. That link is the first link you see in the description box. Join that Discord, and let's have some fun talking pro wrestling. It's a pretty good environment with some people that just love to talk wrestling, AEW, TNA, WWE. And so join that Discord. And tonight, as always, we're powered by our friends over at Dubby Energy. We thank them for powering the show. If you use the code Beyond the Yard at W.GG at checkout, you can save 10% off your order. But we're also sponsored by the sponsor of our first segment, which we call TikTok. Mr. Marinara, can you tell us who that sponsor is and what we're going to be talking about in this segment?
I would love to tell you our fabulous sponsor for TikTok. And to make sure you enunciate that L in the talk. Yes, our fabulous sponsor for this segment is StubHub, of course. We are in the midst of MLB playoff action going on. The NHL literally just started 2 days ago. Obviously, football, both college and the NFL, are in full swing. Basketball is right around the corner. They're doing their preseason stuff. NASCAR season is winding down, and then the concerts are transitioning from our summer outdoor venues into the fall and winter indoor arenas. So, and of course, you got your plays and your Broadway stuff and all sorts of good stuff that are still happening in the fall and winter seasons. So if you guys are looking to score tickets to the hottest events in town, StubHub has got you covered. Whether it's a concert, a sports game, or that must-see Broadway show, StubHub is your one-stop shop for all your live event ticketing needs. And with millions of listings, you can easily find the best seats at the best prices. Plus, with StubHub's 100% buyer guarantee, you can shop with confidence knowing your tickets are legit and ready for you to enjoy the experience. So why wait? Don't miss out on the action. Visit StubHub today and get your tickets to unforgettable moments. StubHub, the world's largest ticket marketplace. And I believe we have a link for you guys in the description that you guys can go down and use to help support the podcast. Any means necessary to help support us, that would be great. Get your ticketing needs through the link in the description so you guys can not miss out on your live event ticketing needs. With that being said, so this edition of Ticket Talk got a little bit more granular than I did last week, since that was the first segment, first time ever doing that segment, so I didn't really know where to go, what to kind of talk about, this and that. So try to be a little bit more precise with it. So we're going to first hit on some of the AEW ticketing side of things. Obviously, we got WrestleDream coming up, not this weekend, but next weekend, I believe. Mm-hmm. You're at 9 days to go until the show. So far at the Chaffetz Arena, where they're hosting WrestleDream in St. Louis. As of this morning, early afternoon is when I kind of looked this stuff up. The last update was on 10/6, now, so 3 days ago from WrestleTix. They had distributed 4,202 tickets. The current setup is for 5,109. So a decent amount that's been distributed for the current setup. They're opening more and more rows and sections up. Seems like almost every other day. The last time they were in the Chaffetz Arena in St. Louis was December 12th of last year, 2024. That was for a Collision. They only had sold 2,343 tickets, so they are well and above that number. However, the number I'm looking at is a bigger show that they hosted at this arena, which was AEW Dynasty back on April 21st of last year. They drew 6,619. Obviously, that show featured Ospreay versus Danielson. I believe that's where Swerve got crowned the world champion by defeating Samoa Joe. Great show, and almost a sellout crowd. Few hundred tickets short, I believe, of a sellout. So we're about 2,400 tickets to go to match that Dynasty attendance. That would mean that they need to average out about 200 tickets selling per day up until showtime. Kind of doable, but just depends on how they really. We got a really good card for WrestleDream next weekend, but got to market a little bit better. Get that word out, do some social media presence. Obviously, your old school advertising, whether it's hitting the media stuff in the city of St. Louis, radio, billboards, TV ads, newspaper, pretty much anything you can think of. They got to hit that market a little bit harder so that way they can bump up those numbers and get as close to that 6,600 numbers they did for Dynasty. One thing I wanted to include with some of these updated ticketing events is what's the cheapest ticket you can get? If you were just walking up, saying, hey, last minute decision, I have enough money, I want to go to a show. What am I looking at? What's the bare minimum I can spend to get into the door? Right now for Dynasty, it's $38.15, which is a steal for pay-per-view. especially with the pay-per-views that AEW puts on, seems like every month. That's the best bang for your buck going for a wrestling show right now. The next one I want to hit on, and if you have anything you want to ask or anything in the meantime, feel free to chime in. Next one I want to hit on was Blood and Guts. Obviously, that's a show we're going to in a little over a month from now on November the 12th. Last update from WrestleTix was 5 days ago on October 4th. Kind of odd that they haven't updated their count for that. I think I saw a report from WrestleTix that Ticketmaster is like cracking down on how many things you can like view and things like that. And I think his account got temporarily banned for something, for doing something like that, which is what he usually does to keep up with accounts. But he's having to slow down a little bit to not get his accounts banned or whatever. So maybe that's why there's a little bit of a lag in some of these updates. But as of 5 days ago, the tickets distributed was 2,744, and the current set of is for 3,844. As of now, we're 34 days to go for the show. Last time they were at the Greensboro Coliseum, now known as the First Horizon Coliseum, was obviously for Revolution, March 3rd of last year, drew 16,280, complete sellout. I don't think you can compare anything to that show, so I'm not looking at that. I'm looking at past collisions and dynamites that they've hosted at that arena. And they have drawn 5,400 fans for all the non-pay-per-view, which they've done a dynamite and a collision in Greensboro, previous to this show and previous to the Revolution show. And each of those crowds drew over 5,400. So as of right now, they've got 2,656 tickets to go to get to 5,400. However, their first count for Blood and Guts did better than the pre-sale for Collision back on August 12th of 2023. A little bit lower than what the Dynamite did in their debut in that arena in December of 2021. So, a little bit of work to do. Got to hit the market a little bit harder for there as well. You would think that with the Blood and Guts match in general, that that would be a big ticket seller. Seems like it's been okay, but could be better. Right now, the cheapest ticket to get you into the door is $31.50. So again, two rings, one big cage, crazy match, big hype, the way that this match has been delivering over the past 4 or 5 years. Great value for that. And they're all lower level. There's not any of the upper decks that have been opened up. So you're getting a lower level ticket for a pretty hyped up Dynamite for $31.50.
Yep.
And then two more things real quick. I wanted to not be so biased. I want to jump into a WWE show and a TNA show. Well, first, do the WWE Raw. It's a little over a month away from now, November the 17th. This is in Madison Square Garden, New York City. This is presumably the last Raw appearance for John Cena. Obviously, this is his last Raw appearance, probably his last appearance in MSG for sure. They got the current set up for 14,246. They're at 12,406 for distributed, so pretty close to the sellout of the allotment that they have set up for 39 days ago, so they're easily probably going to sell this out, no problem. The cheapest ticket to get into the door at Madison Square Garden, cheapest ticket, nosebleed, just saying you were there to be a part of Cena's last Raw at MSG. Cheapest ticket is $276.65 for a Monday Night Raw. That's crazy. Not even probably Raw 30, not even for the reunion shows, the legend shows, Raw after Manias. Are you getting that kind of price for a Monday Night Raw? That's crazy. That is crazy. Yeah, that's wild. And I'm sure they're still going to sell out because the demand's there. They want to see John Cena's last, you know, show. So I get it, but that's crazy. Finally, we do have TNA's Bound for Glory this weekend. 3 days to go. It's on Sunday, October the 12th. Hardys versus the Dudleys or Team 3D, last time ever. They're at the, I believe they are at the, I should have wrote it down. Either the Agonist Arena or the Songhees Arena. It's in Boston.
The Songhees Center.
Songhees Center. Okay. The setups for 5463. They've sold 4,769. Pretty good distribution of the setup. Cheapest ticket to get into the door is $49.75. I think that's pretty fair for a pay-per-view. Got the Hardys in 3D one last time. I don't like the circumstances around that match, but should be a pretty good number for TNA on pay-per-view. And not bad of a price to get you into the arena. I think it holds about 7,000, 8,000, 9,000, so shouldn't be a bad seat in the house. So getting in at $49, $50, not a bad price for to get into the door and watch Bound for Glory.
Absolutely. Can you believe it's been 10 years since we've seen Bound for Glory live from Cabarrus Arena? I don't think we paid anywhere near $49. True,
I think we paid $20 maybe. Set up against the guardrail on the ramp.
Mm-hmm.
I think that show drew right under 2,000 people. I mean, weird arena to have your biggest show in, but that was a good show. I think we got a pretty good value for what we paid for that show.
Absolutely. We'll transition everyone back to one of our favorite segments of the show. That is the mid-card meltdown. And basically, we're just going to sit here and just talk a little bit and rant a little bit about something in the wrestling business that irked us this week. And it doesn't have to necessarily be on screen. It could just be just something random. Anything this week, though, that you just wanted to scream about here on today's mid-card meltdown?
Sick and tired of Shane Van Gisbergen and winning every damn real course race. it's getting pretty old. And I picked the Buffalo Bills to win in my Fanatic Sports Survivor and lost. So now I'm out. I don't get a chance for $1 million. So thanks, guys. I appreciate that.
We're sorry.
I had a chance for a mil and y'all let me down. Wrestling side of things, I just find the whole NXT and TNA tag team belts between the Hardys and 3D to be just kind of
redundant,
asinine, in my opinion. I don't know why they would not do that match in WWE. And I don't like it. If they were doing for the TNA tag team belts, that's one thing. The fact that they are now having the NXT tag belts thrown into it, to me, just makes it laughable of a match. And people are going to say your favorite wrestler defended and won the tag team belts in his retirement tour. So what's the problem? Like I said, if they're fine with the TNA belts, I really wouldn't care. It's fine. But the NXT is supposed to be for the young and up-and-coming guys, even though most people say it's not, and we've been proven that it's not with main roster talent winning those NXT belts recently. But I don't know. I find it just a very, very convoluted storyline, and don't see a great way out of it. But hey, one last time to see him in the ring. Yay. I
do have to fact check you here though for a minute. You said you wish it was done in a WWE ring. I mean, at this point, can we not say that it is basically a WWE ring at this point? I mean, the entire Tuesday night, the entire Tuesday night show was supposed to be some sort of invasion angle, and it ended with Santino and The Rock's pig face daughter shaking hands. Like, what the fuck? It made absolutely no sense. But at this point, that's what it is. That's what it's going to be. I consider TNA a extension of NXT because while it may not legally be an extension of NXT, it's an extension of NXT by proxy. And so I'm gonna just have to. It's essentially going to be a WWE NXT produced pay-per-view that you get to pay however much money for to watch on Triller instead of Peacock. So, for me, I'm gonna be completely honest with you. Outside of the majority of AEW, I've kind of distanced myself from paying attention to a whole lot of wrestling. Just simply, like, honestly, outside of AEW, I find everything that's going on right now completely unwatchable and completely boring, with the exception of some of the major New Japan and CMLL pay-per-views. I'll watch some of those if I have a little bit of extra money on me and want to pay for them. But like on a network TV basis, Dynamite and Collision, like, and I'm lucky to watch Collision. Like this Saturday, I probably won't watch Collision live. I got other things I got to do on Saturday. So that is watch the South Carolina Gamecocks get absolutely murdered by the LSU Tigers. But that's another suffering point that I decided to put myself through. But I don't think I'm the only one though, because I've seen so many WWE fans say they're so tuned out with the product right now that they don't really pay attention to it. I've seen multiple podcasters who used to podcast almost exclusively about WWE say they have to take time off because there's really nothing for them to get passionate about, because WWE is honestly not great. And then you see WWE announce, hey, we know our product sucks, but we're really not going to do anything to change it. Road Dogg, Jesse James is still going to lead SmackDown creative, even though his product has been ash the past several months. We'll just fire everybody else in the room, but he's still going to be the head honcho in charge of SmackDown creative, and we'll bring some other people in, and we'll give you the words that you know, we'll try and fix it, but we really actually won't. And so, like, honestly, if I wanted to watch WWE more, I don't know how much I would want to podcast about it, because it just seems to me like the product is stale, and even the hardcore of hardcore fans don't want to watch WWE. Like, if you can't keep the hardcore WWE fans interested, you've lost your market, and they're trying to clean up the fact that their product sucks by, giving us Team 3D versus the Hardys for the NXT and TNA championships. Hey guys, let's go watch Legends, you know, who can barely walk, brutalize themselves. So, that'll be that. And that's the mid-card meltdown. There really ain't a lot to melt down about, because AEW there has some stuff. I don't know if you've seen the news, but there might be a match that was scheduled for Collision that may not be aired this week because, the match didn't finish.
I got a thought on that.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're going to talk more about that, but I got a thought on that.
We can bring it up now. That's fine.
Can we stop the Kota Ibushi project and the experience, please? Can we stop? He gets injured every single time he comes to America, and I swear it seems like when he performs in front of the American crowd, it's just like he has this nonchalant, non-give-a-shittery about him. It just comes across that he just doesn't care. To me, it just seems like he's just wrestling because he has to, not because he wants to. And it's just, I don't see that intensity, that fire, that fierceness that I'm used to seeing in New Japan wrestling. And I don't know if it's just because he's not comfortable with wrestling from the American crowd. It's a totally different audience and presentation for New Japan. I get it, but I've just not been grown to the Kota Ibushi AEW side of him.
Yeah.
And I understand he's Kenny's best friend, and we got to stop the Kenny Omega experience. But bringing in all these Yoshis and these people from Japan who just aren't cutting it right now. Like, I'm sick and tired of seeing Riho.
That's blasphemy.
I know you like
that. That's blasphemy.
And I don't care for her at all. Ibushi to me has just lost his luster. Emi Sakura is whatever. There's a few that have come over that have been great. Don't get me wrong. Mina Shirakawa, obviously Takeshita. Okada has kind of lost a little bit of his luster from New Japan. But I think over the last few, maybe the last year, he's starting to turn that notch. And it's not for lack of trying. I just think that it's a big adjustment coming from a solely Japanese based audience and promotion to an American audience that reaches globally. And you can only hide behind a talking figure for so long. And at least it looks like that Okada wants to learn English, do better. I cannot wait for his solo feud with him and Takeshita. But regardless, I just think that at some point, we've got to stop bringing in all these people that have some name recognition to them. But as soon as they get in front of an American TV audience, it's just like, who is this person? They're not who I thought they were. Again, understandably so. I get it. But in that case, just don't change yourself from Japan. Even if you don't know English, yell in Japanese. At least I know that's what you do on New Japan. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just been disappointed with Kota's run in AEW. And I wouldn't be surprised if we just don't see him a lot more when he does return. He just kind of goes back to Japan and just stays there for a while, and then every now and then pops over to AEW. But I don't want to see him have a full-time run in AEW anytime soon.
Yeah, well, with the extent of the injury that he sustained, there are some that are saying it may be career ending. He completely shattered his femur. And a lot of times, I mean, you don't, especially with last year, he had both ankles or something, knees or whatever, replaced, and it took him forever to get back from that. Even if Tony Khan wants to bring him back, there's a good possibility he may not be physically capable of performing in the ring. Yeah, let's move on though to some WWE news. And I don't know if you saw, I remember SmackDown's ratings from Friday night were absolutely horrendous. I think it's the lowest they've ever been on NBC, on USA Network. 1.03 million. And I know there's going to be somebody that listened to my last Saturday episode and say, but didn't you say the ratings didn't matter? Why are you bringing this up? And I want to just be upfront and say, I don't think that this tells the full picture of how SmackDown was perceived. Because as far as I remember, SmackDown was in the top five, maybe even the top three. I can't remember, an online trendingness on social media on Friday night. And so, I don't think in 2025 the Nielsen ratings tell the full story. I don't think they ever really did tell the full story. And like I mentioned last Saturday, Eric Bischoff is notorious on his podcast for saying whatever the Nielsen rating was, multiply it by 1.5, because more than likely you're the viewership is 1.5 times more than what Nielsen says. And I think that may actually be, you need to multiply it by like 2 or 3 at this point because of how little they've changed and how vast the viewership of the shows have changed. As far as I'm aware, the YouTube views for the SmackDown clips are about as normal as any other show WWE clips and puts on YouTube. They trend it pretty high on social media. To me, I think that's what networks are looking for. And I said this Saturday, the ratings only tell part of the story because no one has cable anymore for the most part. And a lot of people are watching in a different way that they don't get calculated in these ratings. So I don't think the ratings really matter. And so I guess the question here has to be, is this rating 1.03 million? Is that concerning? If you were NBC, would that concern you? Or would you have to take a look at the broader picture of how well it was perceived from an online perspective, and how you were to look at SmackDown's ratings?
I mean, NBCU has had WWE programming on their networks for what, 40 years almost. They know the game up and down. Things trend, things go up, things go down. So I don't think they're too concerned with it. I do think that they'd care more about what the social media crowd engagement of that goes, because you can have a bad rating one week and then you create a little bit of buzz on social media and the internet, and then people want to tune in the next week. So while we kind of look at it as a week-to-week thing, most TV execs and TV personnel look at a quarter to quarter, year to year aspect of it. So I don't think it's really anything too concerning on NBCU's radar at the moment. If it does start trending down more and more, then yes, absolutely, it'll start becoming a little bit of a topic, or a little bit more of a topic for NBCU execs. Believe me, I kind of wish AEW had 1.03 million viewers, so I'm not going to speak too poorly about that. I know for SmackDown standards, that's low. I think it's just one of those things that they had a bad week TV viewership wise, but hopefully in NBCU's eyes, they can rebound with the way that the show was perceived last week, and hopefully maybe get some steam for tomorrow night. And hopefully they feel they can rebound from a subpar week.
Absolutely. I would be one willing to bet at some point in time, if AEW were to, or if HBO Max were to release the live plus 24 hour data of who watches Dynamite and Collision on Max, I would be willing to bet that it would be somewhere around that 1 to 1.2 million number. I am convinced without a shadow of a doubt, because everybody that I know watches AEW on HBO Max. I don't know a single person that watches it on cable anymore. And even if you have like YouTube TV or Hulu Plus Live TV or Fubo or whatever you may have, not every one of those gets counted in the panel that Nielsen uses. And so I'm just willing to bet, and in some cases, I wish that information was released so that we can actually see the full picture of what HBO is seeing. Because it's already happening. Dynamite's numbers came out from Tuesday, and they got absolutely dominated by AEW or by NXT TNA show. And I came to expect that. The number was a little lower than I thought it would be. It was like 321,000 for AEW, 658,000 or something for NXT. But it's not a shock. And again, I don't know that many people that are watching either product on cable. They're usually all streaming it or watching it on demand or watching it on clips. And so I don't know. I just feel like the ratings conversation is getting old. That's a 40-year, that's a conversation people would have had 40 years ago. And I think you have to change with the business, and the business has gone far and beyond past just what the Nielsen numbers suggest. The next SmackDown piece that I had written in the notes, we're going to have to change a little bit. Santos Escobar, at the time that I wrote this outline, had rejected a WWE offer. Rumors has it he has re-signed with the WWE, but for a lot more money than what WWE had originally offered him. There have been reports from, I believe, Dave Meltzer and maybe some other sources saying that more WWE mid-card talent are going to reject initial offers from WWE in the future. I think this proves one thing, that if you can get a social media buzz and if you can get attention from AEW, WWE will throw their checkbook at you. Because I honestly believe Santos Escobar was very close to signing with AEW, and then WWE came calling with a bigger bag. That has to be that's the only reason that it makes sense. But the bigger question at large is, some of this mid-card talent, it seems like WWE's having a hard time retaining. You see Killer Cross leaving and rejecting. You've seen originally Santos Escobar until he got a bigger deal. I think at one point R-Truth rejected their offer until it became a social media deal. Does WWE have an issue now where are they lowballing their mid-card talent so much that it has to get to the point to where a social media movement is needed for WWE to even give a damn about some of these people? Like, is that a good or a bad trend that we're seeing out of WWE?
I almost want to say it's a TKO Endeavor thing, because they want to maximize as much of their profits as possible. And part of that is to not spend so much money on talent. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, try to cut corners, cut costs when you can. And, you know, I mean, obviously they have a lot of higher end talent, Cody, Roman, Cena, Rock, all that. But when it comes to the lower card, I think that they feel they can lowball those people because they should just be happy with getting on TV. They should just be happy with a promo, a vignette, a match. So I think in their eyes, if they lowball them just a little bit, that, hey, at least we're offering. And, right. You know, it's a WWE. So maybe they get paid. Maybe they get a little bit better payday depending on gate numbers, merch numbers. I don't know. But they know, for the most part, if they have some sort of name recognition, AEW surely going to at least call them, and if they offer, probably it's going to be more than whatever WWE's offer was. And, you know, at that point, it's like, all right, well, let's see if they can, you know, if they make enough noise social media wise, though, WWE will come back with a better offer. Now, it's still kind of curious as to how Karrion Killer Cross hasn't got a new deal signed yet, but his social media presence has started to slow down a little bit. I wonder if he shows up in some capacity at an MLW, at an AEW show, because it does seem like, according to Scarlett, on a recent interview, that both Killer Cross, and she did that, they're open to the idea of going to AEW. And I think the biggest problem was more so on Killer Cross's side than Scarlett's. I know Scarlett kind of had a problem too. I think it had something to do with Don Callis, if I'm not mistaken. That's why they both did not want to go to AEW. But I do believe that the door is the doors, I'm sure, open, and they're open up to the possibility and into possibly going there. So maybe getting that out there will spark WWE to give them a better contract. And I mean, Killer has made it obvious if WWE came knocking with a better offer, he would take it in a heartbeat, it seems like. So if that's almost their plan, is to mention AEW, hopefully that'll drive the price up and give them a little bit better deal to go back. And if that's the case, then hey, don't hit the player, hit the game.
Yeah, so this is my explanation of like, why is AEW so important for the wrestling industry? And it's not necessarily because they put on the best wrestling and they have the biggest name recognition and they're the best wrestling company ever. It's because AEW allows the talent to have an open conversation and have more freedom to say, no, I will reject this low ball offer from WWE, because the minute that I say Tony Khan's calling, I know that they are going to start a bidding war with AEW. And at the end of the day, even if AEW offers way more money than WWE, WWE has to raise the amount of money they're willing to pay for their to retain their talent. If AEW didn't exist, that doesn't happen. You see these people like Ricochet, just an FTR, who left disgruntled at their booking. They would have just sucked it up and stayed with WWE because they needed a paycheck. And that's the biggest reason I think AEW is so influential in wrestling today, is because it allows for the talent to get paid and to get the ability to ask for better booking that they deserve. If you're over, WWE used to not care if you were over with the fans. They were going to pay you what they thought you were worth. Now, if you're over with the fans, they have to take that into consideration, because they don't want that moment of, oh, well, we don't think R-Truth is worth this money, but he's big on social media. If he shows up in AEW, we might lose people. So therefore, we're going to get R-Truth what he wants, or we're going to compromise a little bit more, be willing to negotiate a little bit more with these talent. That's the biggest reason I think AEW plays a big part and why they're so important to the ecosystem of pro wrestling. All right, let's move on to the final WWE news segment. Saturday morning, 8 o'clock. You busy? You doing anything?
If I'm maybe still sleeping. I'm not sure why.
Well, if you want to tune on ESPN at 8 o'clock in the morning, you can watch John Cena fight AJ Styles live from Perth, Australia. Is anybody really going to watch this live? Or are they just going to wait till the afternoon?
No, they're going to watch it live, because college football's on in the afternoon. And they got some pretty good games going on this weekend. So it's a perfect lead into College Game Day. if it's on ESPN, like the true ESPN. But you're going to get your people that are going to watch it. I probably won't, but hey.
Yeah, no, I sure as hell ain't getting my ass up at 8 o'clock to watch that pay-per-view. I'll be lucky to tune it on at any moment ever in history. That might be the last pay-per-view I will never ever watch. 8 o'clock in the morning, that's wild. And I get it, they're in Australia, and it's a live pay-per-view, so... We have to feel what all the British and Japanese fans feel every time we run a pay-per-view at 8 o'clock at night, and they have to stay up till 3 in the morning to watch our shows. So I guess we can't complain. Too bad. Is there anything about this Perth show? Like, does AJ Styles versus John Cena at this point in their career, like, does that just, like, feed your desire to watch it? Like, I don't know. Outside of that match, I couldn't tell you a damn thing that's going on that pay-per-view.
Yeah, if you pointed a gun to my head and said, hey, what are the matches besides Cena and AJ is happening? I couldn't tell you. You'd have to kill me. I mean, it's a good attraction, and they'll put on a good match. Will it do, like, their 2016-17 matches? No. But I think it'll be fine. It'll be fun. I don't like the way that the match came together the way it did. But I understand that obviously with Cena's last year, you're trying to put as many different rivalries and storylines and matches together, and kind of is what it is. But I'm sure I'll watch clips of the match, and if it really gets a great reaction, I may go back and watch it. But it's not going to make me want to get up at any point in time of the night or in the morning to watch the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I think after this AJ Styles feud, we're leading into John Cena's final feud, which, if the rumors are correct, Gunther is his final feud.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on to some AEW news real quick, and then we'll end with the Discord Q&A questions. Last opportunity, if you're watching live on the live stream, put in your questions in the chat box. AEW Dynamite, title Tuesday. It was a pretty interesting show. We're going to get at Wrestle Dream a tag team opportunity for a one-armed Bandido and Brody King to fight for the AEW tag team championships against Takeshka and Kazuchika Okada. That'll be a really good match. I think they're building really well to the pay-per-view. And there's one match specifically on the card that I thought, all right, it's this match I already knew was going to be completely unhinged. But after what we saw on Dynamite on Tuesday between these people, I don't know how much more unhinged they could go. And what I'm talking about is the fact that Darby Allin brought a literal Molotov cocktail to AEW Dynamite. I mean, I don't know how much further can you go than almost trying to blow a man's face off with a glass bottle. Like, you're going to bring C4. You're going to bring a chainsaw. Like, what else are you going to? Our limbs have to be lost. They have to just keep getting increasingly more and more unhinged until somebody can't get any more unhinged. I don't know what else we can expect at the pay-per-view. Your thoughts on the ending of AEW Dynamite on Tuesday?
Yeah, at the end of the show, I think I said to my wife, I was like, is that a Molotov cocktail? And she looked and she's like, yeah. And I was like, what the hell is that doing on a TV show, let alone a wrestling show? That's some Attitude Era shit and Vince Russo stuff I've ever seen.
He might be writing for AEW the way he keeps putting it over.
You know, Jeff Jarrett's still in town, so I mean, listen, never know. that was wild. I don't know what in the hell they're gonna between the Molotov cocktail and the flamethrower. You have to think someone's gonna be lit on fire. It might as well have just done an Inferno match or light your opponent on fire so we can get that out of the way. Though I'm surprised that Tony Khan hasn't said, all right, because of the nature of the graphic and the violence that we've seen on Dynamite, that it could be an unsanctioned match. And I know they've already done one, and I they've done a few, and I get it. But if any match deserved to be unsanctioned, this would definitely be one of those matches. Swerve and Hangman is up there, and I I have no idea what they're going to do a week from Sunday, Saturday, whatever day it is, Saturday. I have no idea what they're going to do. But man, it's going to be a train wreck that you can't turn away from.
Yep. I mean, in a way, it's a good way to get people to buy the pay-per-view. Because, I mean, you got to figure out what's next. What can be next? And so that, I guess that's their way of, hey, look at this extreme cluster of a segment. Tune in to the pay-per-view and you'll get 30 more minutes of it or whatever. Next thing on AEW is, have we put the APB out on or the missing person report out on for those women's tag team titles yet? Because this is the second Dynamite in a row that they were completely just looked past. And listen, like, Tony, this is my biggest complaint. And for everybody in the Discord that says I don't have complaints about Tony Khan, warning, I'm about to give you a complaint about Tony Khan. The world's probably about to end. Listen, Tony Khan is really good at having these really big ideas, but he's absolutely ass at putting these ideas to fruition. The AEW women's tag team titles are what people have been wanting forever. You finally give them to us, and then 2 weeks in a row, we get nothing about what the hell is going on with these titles. And just a little, like, you don't have to be like, all right, we're running a tournament and these are the people. You don't have to do that yet. Just a little bit, like, just give us a breadcrumb of what we can expect with the AEW women's tag team belts, because completely just not talking about it at all is not a way to build anticipation for whatever is going to happen with these belts. And I've been pushing for forever for these belts to take place. I've built my own mock tournaments for this. I've booked who should be the first tag team champions. Like, I'm really excited for the opportunity of the women's tag division, but I'm 2 weeks in and it's like, where's it at? You can't give us this promise of, you know, the promised land of the women's tag division, and then not give us the breadcrumbs to keep us interested and wandering the wilderness until we get to that promised land. And I know you've already been adamant that you're not a big fan of even having the women's tag team belts. So I'm sure this is just kind of like proving yourself right that this is probably a bad idea to even create this division. Your thoughts on the missing tag team titles?
Listen, I it's not that I really wanted to be right about this topic, but I will say that the AEW may prove me wrong. I say give it a year and a half. We may only give it 2 months. the way it's going. I mean, I understand Tony did that to probably pop a rating, get some attention on AEW, and that's fine and dandy, and I understand it. But if you're going to make that announcement that people have been looking forward to, and then you absolutely don't make a single mention of it in 2 weeks since, why should we give a damn?
Right.
If you're not making the effort of, like I said, you don't have to do every single week, do an unveil the title, do a 20, 15, 10 minute segment on it. Just give me a backstage promo. Give me an interview with any of the female wrestlers saying, you know, I really hate Mercedes Moné. I really want to kick her ass. I want her title. But you know what? I'm also thinking about those new women's tag team belts because I want to be the first woman to say I held those new belts. Give me something. It ain't got to be the entire show. It doesn't have to be 20, 30 minutes. It could be a 2 minute, 3 minute, 4 minute segment. I don't need much.
Right.
But give me enough to be like, at least you're mentioning it. At least you're trying to give it some steam. At least you're trying to give it some momentum, some hype. And we're doing nothing with it. So whenever they do decide, and it's probably going to be a tournament, which it should be, when it comes time for that, it's like, oh, now all of a sudden we give a shit about this. And it's like, it's not been handled in a good light at all. And
right.
An idea that just popped in my head is I wonder if they do the first ever women's Continental Classic, but they do a tag team Continental Classic, and that's the tournament, and that's the way to get the winner of the tournament to be the women's tag team champions. I don't know.
That could be maybe a possible.
That's where they're going. Yeah, that's still another 2 months away at World's End.
Right.
You got to do something here pretty quick.
Yeah, that's a possibility that that's what, where they're going. I just wonder, like, who are they waiting for? Because I feel like it's not a certain time frame. Like, Tony Khan wouldn't have announced it if he wasn't ready on giving more information. I just wonder if they're waiting on a particular person to – and I wonder, like, is it Hikaru Shida? Because I know she announced that she re-signed and she's waiting on her visa to be – approved so that she can come back over to America. So I wonder, like, are they waiting for Shida to come back over to the United States before they push it through, or is it Red Velvet to get healthy, or is it Casey Catanzaro? Like, is she trying to sign a deal so that her and Lacey Lane can tag team like they tag teamed in WWE? Like, I just wonder if there's a particular person that they're waiting on, and not necessarily waiting for a particular moment in time, but as soon as that person is cleared to come back to AEW or join AEW, then they'll just run it out. The issue that we have is we don't know what the circumstances behind it are. We just know that we're waiting for them. And sometimes that blind anticipation for something turns people away if you don't give them something to keep them interested. And so I'm excited, but I'm also a little bit nervous now because we haven't even had a match in the women's tag division, and it feels like they're not necessarily handling the division properly. Final AEW news. Mercedes Moné is now only 9 days away from becoming the longest ever TBS champion holder. The expectation is she's probably not wrestling another TBS championship match until past then. So the expectation is she will become the longest ever TBS champion, passing Jade Cargill. And we hear it all the time. At least I do, because I'm such a Mercedes Moné fan, from a lot of these Fed boys and all the WWE fans who seem to think she's a hindrance to the wrestling business because Mercedes Moné has 9 or 10 belts or whatever she has now. And she's probably about to get two more because she's going to two brand new promotions for the first time here soon. But I think Mercedes Moné is doing a net positive for at least independent wrestling in a way that I don't understand where this negative reaction about Mercedes Moné has come from. People call her selfish and egotistical, and all she cares about is collecting all these titles and not necessarily about these promotions. And here's some news. Sunday, October 19th, at the Burton Cummings Theater in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, Winnipeg Pro Wrestling will hold their show, Rumble in the Burt. And they've already broken the attendance record immediately after announcing Mercedes Moné will be coming next Sunday. Attendance record broken, and they are very close to selling out this arena, the Burt Cummings Theater, for the first time ever in company history. Mercedes Moné brings eyes to local independent companies. She's going over to Denmark, and I don't know what numbers Denmark is showing because I think it's probably a month or so away before she goes over there. But I'm sure they'll do better numbers than they've ever done before. And I'll get your side of things here in a minute. But the thing about Mercedes Moné is, unlike Roman Reigns, because Roman Reigns tried to play that character to where he was the special attraction, that he was going to show up only at the big events because he was a special attraction. But the problem with running that character in WWE is he's only a special attraction to WWE events. Mercedes Moné, on the other hand, she's a special attraction to anywhere she wants to go. So she can go to Denmark, and for $25, some kid who dreamed on meeting Mercedes Moné ever since she was in WWE can now watch Mercedes Moné wrestle front row for $25 at some indie show. And she's helping that independent company stay afloat. She's meeting all of these independent people for that, for a really good possibility. They may have never been able to watch Mercedes Moné wrestle live. And now she's coming to their local show and they can watch her live. She's helping get these otherwise unknown female talent recognized. I don't know if until she wrestled Deonna Strong in Italy, if I ever heard of Deonna Strong, until she wrestled Kanji and Sapphire Reed and Rev Pro, I would have never known about them because I'm not the most educated on European independent scene. And so, but now I know about him. And Sapphire Reed is one of the greatest up-and-coming female wrestlers that are coming out of the game in England. And Will Ospreay has put his official endorsement stamp on Sapphire Reed just the other day. And Mercedes Moné is getting these people noticed. And so that's the importance. If the importance of AEW is allowing wrestlers to get what they deserve in terms of booking and in terms of money, Mercedes Moné is important to the game of wrestling because now she's putting a platform on women's wrestling outside of what the WWE wants you to see. And she's actually saying women don't have to, you know, be majority sex symbols who are somewhat decent in the ring. We can have women who can do a lot of the same stuff that the men can do. They just aren't noticed because, you know, a lot of indie shows don't make a whole lot of time for their women's divisions. And she's forcing these indie companies, hey, my name will make you money, but you got to put the women in the main event. You got to give us our time. You got to give us our flowers. And I think it helps the women's revolution. Mercedes Moné showed up in Boston and said she was now going to be the face of not just the women's revolution, but the women's global revolution. And I think she's doing that, but she's also helping these independent companies make more money than they've ever made in their entire lives. Your thoughts overall on Mercedes Moné's importance to the business, not necessarily if you like her as a wrestler, because that's objective. You can like and hate whoever you want to like as a performer, but there's objective truth to the fact that she's helping these smaller independent companies. Your thoughts on her independent or her importance to the independent scene?
Well, my question is, whenever she does wrestle in Denmark, and we presume that she'll win that championship, will Lars Eller be the one who will be hand-delivering that championship belt? Because, you know, he's a proud Dane. People who have no idea who that is, just look him up. Stanley Cup champion, the Tiger.
The Tiger.
I think that what Mercedes is doing is smart for her. I think it's good business because she is an attraction. She has a big name. So she's going to draw crowds for whoever she goes. Depending on the size of the promotion, the size of the arena, will she sell out every single thing in the world? No, she hadn't done that for the New Japan shows in America. Right. But going to these independent shows where they're not very well talked about, not very well known, they kind of get name recognition on AEW because now she's carrying around their belt on the show. And some people may take a picture and be like, what belt's that for? What belt does she win now? And then you may look up that promotion. All of a sudden, now they're getting a better social media engagement because Mercedes has the belt. And that could be very good marketing for them. It could be name recognition for them of, oh, that that's in my area. I had no idea that even existed, or that's an hour and a half ride up. That's right. A local-ish promotion. I didn't think it existed, you know? So I think it's good business for her. It has the potential for being good business for the indie promotions. The Buck Collector thing, it is what it is. I'm not here to hate on it or love it. Ultimate Dragon did the same thing back in the late 90s and had at least 12 different championship belts at the same time as well. And WCW made a point to put that over and on TV and make it seem like Ultimate Dragon was a phenomenal talent, which he was. Mercedes Moné is kind of in that same stratosphere of very good wrestler, wins a bunch of belts, showing them on TV, trying to get name recognition for her as, wow, this person must be good. She has a lot of belts. Wow, she travels the world to win these belts. That's pretty cool. It's pretty kick-ass that she just doesn't seclude herself to North America or just, you know, Canada and the United States. So I think in some ways it does good business for those promotions, but it does very good for Mercedes. And that's the way that I wish most people would do, is be a fighting champion all around the world, defend your belt if the promotion will allow it on different brands and shows and promotions. So I think it's a good thing overall and should be celebrated for, should be acknowledged. You may not have to like Mercedes Moné the wrestler, but from a business aspect of it, I think she is giving back to the industry and trying to make it better, trying to make it grow, trying to make it more widely accepted. And, yep, you know, helping female wrestlers come up and know that, hey, you don't have to be what WWE showcased women in the late 90s and 2000s. This is the 2014 and beyond women era of wrestling, and it's here and it's celebrated. So I think it's doing much, much more good than harm.
Good stuff. We're going to close this show by kind of rapid fire some of these Discord Q&A questions. The first one comes from Kara at Miss Heel Queen. She reads, I think this is directed to me. Why are you gay? To which I have to say, I'm always happy. I can't explain it.
Oh God.
All right. let's move on. The next one. This is from We Too Deep himself, host of the Slappin' Meat Community Show. I think he changed the name of his show to the Slappin' Meat Community Show. He reads, it's a long question. Here we go. Remove all bias. How can you say that what WWE is doing with AAA and TNA is bad for business when more people now know about the product than before they started the partnership, and well, considering TNA is about to get a TV deal? And I'll answer this one first. This is why I personally, and there's never bias. Like I think I'm totally one of the most unbiased people when it comes to talking about wrestling. I have what I like, I have what I dislike, but I'm just going to call it as I see it. What they're doing is totally opposite of what should be what the wrestling business should be. Like, I'm all for partnerships in wrestling. I love the fact that AEW partners with AAA and partners with New Japan Pro Wrestling, and in some way, shape, or form, I think is about to begin a partnership with MLW, if rumors are correct, and Rev Pro has some form of partnership. But a partnership should be, I run AEW, you run your show, we're going to use talent interchangeably, but I'm not going to change the way you run your show. If you want my talent to win, you can call that shot. If you want my talent to lose, you can call that shot. But we're going to do whatever we got to do to get more people's eyes on everybody's show so that we can better the industry as a whole. Now, what WWE is doing with AAA and with TNA is they're saying, I don't care how you used to run things. If you want to partner with us, you have to run it our way. We call the shots. Hey, we bought 51% of AAA. Therefore, the entire creative staff gets replaced by old white man, Undertaker, and whoever else they decided to run creative. Like, Undertaker knows exactly what Lucha Libre is and how it should be ran. Like, and so that's why it's bad for the business. One is they don't understand the target market, but two, when you essentially make AAA and TNA no longer competition, you bring them in-house, you remove competition, and in any industry, when you remove competition, it always hurts the industry. It always hurts the business overall. When a local small mom and pop store gets bought or closes down because the big bad giant comes in and takes over their target market, it's never good, because there's one less business in the area. There's less opportunities for jobs. There's less opportunities for people to be able to move interchangeably. And again, the example I always use is look at England's independent scene pre-NXT UK, how vibrant it was. And you had so much competition in the UK that so many new wrestlers were becoming known. Even in the United States, because of how good the scene was, NXT steps in, they start NXT UK, they hoard all of the top talent, don't allow for the independent scene to keep any of the top talent to help train and mentor the new people to come in. Anybody that was seen as a legitimate talent in England got hoarded by NXT UK. COVID hits, and the scene dies. NXT UK dies, and now there's a couple promotions left in England, but the biggest one is Rev Pro, and it's not like they're doing, you know, numbers they used to do pre-COVID, pre-NXT UK. And so I see that as the example as to why it's bad for the business, and I'll leave it to you.
I think that, first of all, if TNA were to get a new TV deal, I feel like they would have already announced something like that. I think with AAA, the fact that they bought the company, like, it's different with AEW and ROH, because ROH practically wasn't a company anymore. Right. It was on its deathbed. And it was going to go to a wrestling company, more than likely, and it was just depending on who the Sinclairs wanted to sell it to. And they decided to sell it to Tony Khan because he wanted to keep it going. And he still kept it going. Wish they had a TV deal, but they don't. They still do pay-per-views. They still have shows. Still have Honor Club. Still going. It's not what it once was. And it's, I don't want to say it. In some ways, it's not good, but it's still alive. It's still going.
Yeah.
With AAA, I know that they were going through a little bit of financial hardships or whatnot, but it's like them and CMLL are the only two real big acts down in Mexico. And they've always competed. They've always gone head-to-head with each other. And it's like, what's the problem with that? You can align yourself with AAA and say, hey, you know what? We like your talent. We like the way you guys are coming up. We want to give you a platform to try to become a bigger star, to get a better name recognition. That's fine. But to buy the company outright and then basically put in your installation of what you think is what that company needs and deserves for the long-term future is probably not very viable. There's a reason why WWE didn't do a whole lot of business in Mexico. It was because AAA and CMLL had the rights to these big arenas to basically say, no, you can't use that, or yes, you can use that.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, that's cool, in my opinion. Because it's like, well, yes, in a way, it does hurt the fan for not seeing the biggest promotion in the world. At the same time, that's them saying, this is our territory. Like, we can allow you to use some of the stadiums or use another arena, but you're not going to use Arena Mexico. You're not going to use Monterey or whatever. And I think that was WWE's way of trying to get into Mexico, and that was the spearheaded way of doing it. Just to buy the damn thing outright. And now we have not only a platform, a path in Mexico, now we have a whole area that we can almost control. And I think within a year, you'll probably see that it's a WWE-styled company, and it's just not going to fit the Mexican audience. They have there's a whole – with Lucha Libre in Mexico, it is a tried-and-true tradition, you know, and they have their – it's almost like a comic book come to life in Mexico, the way that they do their storylines, their baby faces, their heels, their organizations, their factions.
Right.
And with WWE, I don't think they're going to do anything that's going to be like that. No. But it may work. It may not. I don't think buying a territory like that in a different company, or excuse me, a different country, is what's best. TNA is one thing. If they had bought TNA, which I think we both think they probably have, that's fine. But to buy a company in another country, to me, is like, you're just trying to get your platform exposed to that place, and that's your pipeline to get into it. And now,
right,
you kind of weaseled your way into that in a way.
Right. And one last piece. I mean, and again, this is just my personal opinion. I don't have any proof, because apparently I can't have opinions on this without proof. I don't have proof, but I can just see from prior events and what WWE has done, and have an opinion that history may repeat itself. When WWE starts buying up territories, they usually don't stop. They usually wait. They usually keep buying until they're the only one available. And they're aligned with the Saudis. They're aligned with TKO. They have unlimited cash flow. They can buy whatever they freaking want at this point. And so to me, it's just like, I don't see them stopping. I see them, you know, Pro Wrestling Noah. I think if they wanted to get in Japan, there they go. They have Pro Wrestling Noah or Marigold or whatever that they can work with and take over. And I just see from past experience, this probably isn't a good thing, because they usually don't stop till they're their last territory left. Next.
Last thing for me on it. I think it pisses off maybe more so Triple H and those in the upper brass on the WWE side of things, rather than Endeavor and TKO.
Yeah.
That AEW didn't have to buy New Japan Pro Wrestling. They didn't have to buy CMLL. Yet they have a very functioning partnership with both of them, that they're able to host events. One that has a pay-per-view every year with Forbidden Door in New Japan. And they just went to Arena Mexico, an arena that WWE has wanted to be in for so long, and AEW was able to get into it because of the name and the partnership that they had built with CMLL. And I think that pissed off WWE so much that they were like, all right, now we really need to play hardball and find a way into there, because we're not going to let that happen. Right. And I think that's what happened, but neither here nor there.
Right. All right. Next question. This is a less serious question, but it'll keep you thinking. All right. You got to choose one of the three: polar bear, saltwater crocodile, or Asian hornet. In their element, which one could you beat in a fight? Let me start this off, because I actually have some logic behind this. Again, I saw these questions, so I had time to think about it. I'll let you think about it for a minute. And maybe my opinion will help stir you a little bit. All right. Ain't no way in hell I'm beating a polar bear. They're just large and in charge and muscular, and they're apex predators. And I'm not in their element. They live in icy tundra. I don't like the cold. I don't do well with ice. They would destroy me. The Asian hornet. They're small, but very venomous. And because they're small, you tick them off, they usually swarm you. I have no shot. They're going to sting me several times. I'm going to go into anaphylactic shock and die, and I'm dead. But the saltwater crocodile. Think about this for a minute. They're ambush predators. They rely on surprise attacks. If I'm in the water and I know it's there and I know where it's at, I think I could at least put up a fight with a saltwater crocodile. I might not win. I might lose a limb, but I think that's the best one that I could fight with. So I'll go with saltwater crocodile.
Assuming we don't have any sort of weaponry or any forms of defense, because if that was the case, I'd get the damn wasp spray that I have here and just spray the shit out of those mortar hornets, and bam, you're all dead.
Right.
That's the easiest opponent because of the fact it's small. However, like you said, all I gotta do is swarm you, and you can quickly be outnumbered, and that's all she wrote. I would rather take my chances with a crocodile versus the polar bear. Even if I have ice cleats, that polar bear, all it's got to do is stand on its hind legs, and then that's it. I'm gone. and saltwater crocodile. It's going to be a rather tough battle, but I would kind of take my chances and just hope for the best.
All right. Let's see. We got any more wrestling related ones. Here we go. Would you consider the Hardy Boys the greatest tag team of all time? No.
No.
Who would you consider?
That was a very quick one.
Yeah. Who would you consider the greatest tag team of all time? Because I have an answer. I thought about this already. I think the best tag team I think of all time is there's a modern answer and an old time answer. The old head answer is the Rock and Roll Express, and the new answer is the Young Bucks. Either or, those are my two favorite tag teams. But anyways,
I'll go with a modern and a old school one. Modern, hands down, FTR.
Okay.
Hands down, FTR. Old school, probably got to be the Hart Foundation. And they mirror each other. Obviously, Dax is a huge Bret Hart fan, so that kind of goes hand in hand. But, Now, old school is hard too, because there's a lot of good tag teams. Rock and Roll Express is right up there. Midnight Express, the Freebirds, the Andersons, Briscoes, the Wild Samoa. I mean, there's a lot of them. But I think if I really had to choose, it would be the Hart Foundation for old school, and modern would be. I don't think there's really any comparison with opinion. I don't think there's any comparison modern than FTR. I think just hands down the best in the 20th century.
That's fair. That is fair. I asked just right before we went live if anybody else had any questions. We had one. What is 2+2? I answered that already and said the amount of wins the New England Patriots will have this year. Then we got, if AEW goes out of business, would you stop watching wrestling? No, because New Japan and CMLL will still exist. So, but AEW is not going out of business, so it's all right. It's all right.
Right. I probably wouldn't stop watching wrestling. I think that I would not watch it as religiously. Or if I really just didn't watch WWE or New Japan or any of the current promotions, I would just go back and watch old school stuff on YouTube and Peacock with WCW and WWE. So I would still watch wrestling in some sort.
Absolutely. Well, that's all the questions we have. Hey, we're planning on maybe doing this Q&A. That might be a good way to end the show every week. We'll see how that goes. But we're going to close this here by saying, if you haven't already, smash that like button, comment below. If you listen to the audio, give us a 5-star review. Like your Dave Meltzer in any AEW pay-per-view, give us a 5-star for the main event. share this video with your wrestling buddies, hit that subscribe button, hit that notification bell, and we'll see you Saturday for my solo episode. I still don't have a topic yet, so I can't promo it yet. My fault. But it'll be a good one, regardless of what I talk about. And like always, we're going to send it over to Cody Marinara for the final words.
Well, even though it is getting late on the East Coast, if you're on the West Coast watching, appreciate it. If you're anywhere in the world besides America, we appreciate you watching, listening, tuning in. Today, as of this live broadcast, October the 9th, 2025, more specifically, October 9th, it is Mr. Eddie Guerrero's birthday. So happy birthday in heaven. Viva la raza. One of the greatest wrestlers of all time. So for Latino Heat and for us and for both of us until James's show on Saturday and for us next Thursday, find your favorite condiment, find your favorite sauce, find your favorite whatever to dip things into, stir it up, and always remember to stay saucy, my friends.
Yes, sir. Viva la raza. We'll see y'all next week. Beyond.